98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
16-1. Those are the new odds for the Suns to win an NBA championship. Those are the kind of numbers that reflect a legitimate dark horse contender. Only six teams rank as bigger favorites, and it's more anecdotal evidence of what we're all feeling, that it's been a long time since Arizona was this close to a major professional championship. Exciting, isn't it? And after watching Jamal Murray go down with an ugly knee injury last night, effectively derailing the title hopes of the Nuggets, I've got a new deal I would like to propose to the basketball gods. Give us in Arizona a clean bill of health. Give us a fair shot to win our first championship, and we will live with the results. We'll accept everything that comes with it, even first-round failure and incompetent officiating. And that's because of what went down with the Nuggets, and nobody in Arizona wanted to interpret Murray's injury as a break for the Suns, because that would be inappropriate, and because Suns fans have been there before. Far too often. So buckle up, Planet Orange. Murray's injury was a reminder of how fragile a basketball team and a city's dreams can be. It's brutal and beautiful. It's brutiful, a word that Wolf came up with this morning. And that's what happens when you give your heart to a basketball team, because, like they say, love makes fools of us all. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. You can test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. You can find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Brutiful. Brutiful, right?
Brutal and beautiful. And that's kind of what the roller coaster ride is like in the playoffs, right? I mean, it's you saw it last night. They're re-showing that Jamal Murray driving to the basket, crumpling down, banging the floor, and don't you just feel crazy empathy for the Nuggets? Even though ostensibly that's one less obstacle possibly in our path.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about just how quickly it can all derail. The Nuggets were the talk of the Western Conference, even with the way the Suns had been playing. With the Jazz basically having the best record in the Western Conference the entire season, once they got hot early, the Nuggets were the team that everybody was watching. They got a slow start. They worked in some new pieces. They lost some pieces from last year. And since the trade deadline, when they got Aaron Gordon, people had really been paying attention to how well the Nuggets had been playing. They've now lost two in a row, and more importantly, they lose their second best player in Jamal Murray, a guy who is an up-and-coming star in this league, a guy who's not afraid in crunch time to take big shots and make big shots. I hate to say it, the Nuggets are done. They have a front runner for the MVP. The Nuggets are finished without Jamal Murray, in my opinion.
Same here. And that is, to me, it's sad. Even though the Nuggets were one of the teams that I thought were a real danger to pass the Suns in the standings and in terms of being a better roster than the Phoenix Suns once the playoffs begin, and that's because of what they did at the trade deadline. It's also the danger of playing intense, heavy minutes leading into the playoffs, because when things ramp up in basketball, you can see it. You can see guys playing harder. And that's kind of why I'm conflicted on some of the defensive efforts and lapses I've seen from the Suns recently, because this is the last thing I want to happen to them, to be stuck in fourth quarters, tight fourth quarters of high pressure basketball, and then something goes pop because guys are really pushing it. And we've seen it in the playoffs. Injuries happen all the time in the playoffs. And I've done this a couple times in the Blast now. It's a recurring theme, but I really do feel that we need our luck to change. And you hate to base everything on luck, but we've seen what happens when you don't have it.
Well, true. Isn't this a step in that direction where finally the breaks are going the Suns' way?
Well,
the Nuggets, who are fast charging towards the Sun, all of a sudden are dealing with injuries.
Yeah, and again,
what the Lakers have dealt with.
Yeah, exactly. So, but there's still a lot of basketball ahead of this team. So we're gonna see exactly what our luck is like. That's gonna play out.
And you know, focusing on that thinking on last night's game when you got a Rockets team. It's been way down this year. Obviously, they've gone undergone so much change. They played hard. They played well. They shot the ball well. They had a couple of individual players. Christian Wood is a fantastic basketball player. Mm-hmm. That Kevin
Porter,
he's
pretty good.
Kevin Porter Jr., really, really talented. And they had some other guys that played really well last night. It was a tough game for the Suns. Monty Williams kind of talked about how things are different with how opponents look at the Suns every single night.
We have to understand that teams are going to come at us every night. Okay, that's the deal. We're getting everybody's best. And so you have to be at your best. And so that's the approach that we have. We're the hunted now in so many ways. And it's different for this group, but we have to understand that. And our guys did. You know, I asked them how they felt. They felt the same way I did. And so our approach tomorrow has to be at a higher level in every facet of the game.
Okay, they are hunted. That being said, still these thoughts.
We love getting wins. We'll never, ever lose sight of how important it is to win a game. But that was not the standard of consistency and level of play that we expect around here. Defensively, we gave up 62 points in the second half. And in the second half, we scored 45 points. You know, the approach to today was not at the level that it's got to be for us to be the team that we need to be. And so, yeah, we hit some threes. But we gave a team confidence when we could have put them away. And as happy as I am about the win, I understand this league a lot. And we just have to be better in those moments when you have a chance to put a team away. We just didn't do that well tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something the Suns haven't dealt with. What's changed, though,
mm-hmm.
is the severity of the language after the game. It's not to say that it's offensive or anything, but talking about standard, earlier in the season when the Suns were pushed by a bad team and got a win or lost to a bad team, it wasn't, there wasn't a talk of standard. It was, mm-hmm. hey, this is a tough league. I like the fact that we're getting into mid-April now on the calendar and the consistency of the message that has trickled down from the top all the way down to the bottom all season long, those words are getting stronger. We have a standard of what we want to play with. That was not acceptable last night, even though we won the game. That's the mentality the Suns should have. That's the attitude they should have. These games are all important. Yeah. Three more home games on this homestand. And then you want a litmus test? You want a trial by fire? When it comes to the Phoenix Suns, you're going to get it on that next road trip. That is a... It might be the most brutal road trip, brutal stretch, even coming back after the road trip of any team in the league. And I know when Western teams go east, they play a combination of those same opponents.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, that is a rough stretch. We're going to know a lot more come the end of the month about the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I agree. And once again, I really like what I'm starting to see from this basketball team. And I mean, I have all season long. But in terms of the performances and the growth that I think is going to be necessary for the team to actually pull this off, the more that I see DA play solid around the rim, the better I feel about everything. And he's been pretty darn good as of late. I thought there was some drifting happening last night. There were some mental errors last night. There was some of those goofy plays, but there was also a lot of good stuff. And I think he's really kind of learned to stay as locked in as he's ever been. And it's making all the difference in the world, in my opinion. Because if he can defend the rim and stay on the court and be active, the Suns have enough to win a championship. It's just a matter of actually executing and making it happen in endgame situations. The good thing I saw from DA last night, as you pointed out, when he gets the ball in the post now, he's very decisive. And he did a little spin move, an up and under, and it was a very athletic move. And every now and again, you get something from that guy that you go, wow, you're 7 foot tall and you can move like that?
Mm-hmm. Not a bad thing.
No.
Now, he was, again, playing against a post player in Christian Wood, who's not your typical five. He does have length, but he doesn't have a lot of bulk to him. But DA did look decisive. And I did look up that tweet that DeAndre Ayton put out there this morning. A lot of pressure on my shoulder, steady moving, but it's heavy. I'm learning my lesson, Vic.
Mm-hmm.
When you see messages like this on Twitter from athletes,
yeah.
It's never their own words.
No.
So, of course, I delved into my giant hip-hop encyclopedia in my mind.
Because
I am a walking hip-hop encyclopedia.
Yes, you are. You're
a rap encyclopedia. Yeah. It's from a song called Mannequin by Pop Smoke.
Okay.
Yeah. It's about the only phrase we could say on the radio.
I'm glad he chose that one to tweet
on that song.
Right.
I mean, there's some lyrics right around the caption that he chose, which I'm like,
a little Okay.
But see, this is also, though, because his numbers last night, 18-8. And people were like, oh, when he was getting 18-8 last year, you were criticizing him. It's like, because you actually have to watch how he's playing, how he's contributing, when he's playing well. It's more than just stats with him.
I have finally, it's taken a while, but I finally come on board with what Bickley has been saying. The number, if you are watching the numbers on DeAndre Ayton, either A, you're doing it wrong, or B, you got him on your fantasy team and you're concerned.
Yeah, good point.
Again, 18-8, that was a perfectly acceptable performance last night.
Oh, absolutely. It's all, to me, it's really just about the force and the volume in which he plays.
Now,
and
make some free throws.
Yeah,
and we'll be talking about 21-8. But
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's shaping up to be a lot of fun, and my heart goes out to any Nuggets fans because I can't even imagine how terrible that must be.
Yeah, as soon as I meet a Nuggets fan, I will pass along my sympathies.
I don't know one either.
I know one. The guy on the morning show, the board operator, Mitchie the Kid, is a Nuggets fan, believe
it or not. Is he really?
Yeah. So he was crushed.
Think about this. Okay, so
never talked to him before.
If you were a Nuggets fan, your team won the trade deadline, okay? And not only did you make big moves, but Aaron Gordon was better with Denver than he's really ever been, and it looked like, wow. So if you're a Nuggets fan, you've got that going for you. Then you lose a game to the Celtics in which you're destroyed, and you go, okay, let's just get back and pummel the Warriors, and then you're losing to the Warriors, and that happens. I can't even, and the reason why it resonates with me is because we've lived this. And how ironic that on a day when Joe Johnson announces he's making a comeback.
Did he? I didn't even see that.
Yeah, he tweeted out a picture. He looks in better shape now than he ever has.
Making a comeback for the Big Three or making a comeback for the NBA?
Well, you wonder why he did that interview about a month ago. About, boy, you know, I wish I would have stayed with the Suns. Boy, we could have won a championship. Now he's like, sees that the Suns are good again, and all of a sudden he's making a comeback. Very coincidental, don't you think?
Well, what, do you think he's coming back here? They don't have a spot for Joe Johnson.
But you know the mentality of some Phoenix sports fans is when somebody who played on a team comes back, there's always the open door.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only been 17 years since he left the team.
isn't he 41 years old?
I was gonna say, it's only been about half of that since he's been good.
No, that's not necessarily true.
He's always had some sort of value. I agree with that. Well, one more from Monty Williams last night, talking about DeAndre Ayton's performance and pressure.
His pressure on the rim, I've said it since I've been here, is instrumental in our productivity on offense. And you know, he got some lobs around the basket, and just him being there opens it up on the backside for us. So I thought DA in that aspect was pretty good. So we have to have that tomorrow for sure, but at a higher level in the other environments of our offense.
And I'll say this, too, in terms of the development, and I don't know if it's a finished product or if it's something that you can count on, but I will say I've noticed on the offensive glass, there's still the tendency from DeAndre Ayton to maybe not grab the ball. He's more of a volleyballer.
Yeah, he is.
But he's doing a really good job of volleyballing the ball so he can grab it
of
and
keeping,
get the offensive rebound.
Yeah, okay.
And he's been aggressive in doing it.
Yeah, the aggression around the rim, it's obvious. He's not letting guys blow by him. He's defending guys at the rim. And that to me is everything. You do that, you're no longer a weak link. You're no longer going to be targeted. You're going to be in far more of an asset than a liability.
Suns and Heat tonight from Phoenix Suns Arena in downtown Phoenix, looking for their ninth straight home win. And I'm just trying to look up real quick if the Heat are going to be wearing their Trix yogurt uniforms tonight. I'm not sure. I haven't seen
them. I love them. You know I love them.
I know you do. Those uniforms were designed with Jarrett Carlin
Absolutely.
In mind. Are you kidding me? You don't have to be a star athlete to get your signing bonus. Just text BONUS right now to 620-620. and listen for your name this afternoon at 1:35 to win $500. That's bonus to 620-620. It's the Arizona Sports signing bonus.
I just felt right place, right time. You know, opportunity to come here and just contribute to something that I believe is on the rise and is going great. Just the opportunity to come learn from these veterans that are here. And I just feel like the opportunity, you know, I just let go during free agency. This is God's plan for me.
James Conner, newest member of the Arizona Cardinals, introduced at a press conference today. We carried it live earlier in the show. Former Pittsburgh Steeler joining the running backs room. So he joins the likes of Chase Edmonds, and we'll split time with him. Also in that room right now, Jonathan Ward, Eno Benjamin. Interesting blend right there, because the one thing I really do like about the addition of James Conner is the Cardinals for years haven't really – I mean, David Johnson was a big running back. Mm-hmm. But they, since he's been gone, they've been really missing that size aspect. And we saw it a couple times last year in crucial situations, short yarded situations where the play calling got a little wonky. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was due to another reason or if it was due to the fact that, hey, we don't feel like we can just line up and pound it down, pound it up the middle in a short yarded situation because our backs are not as big. So I like it from that standpoint.
Yeah, I like it because he's a physical player. He's got a really good reputation. He's got a good backstory. And I think he hits a couple of needs that the Cardinals need. They needed a bigger running back who really looks for the hard yards. Chase Edmonds is very, very tough. He's not afraid to run inside, but he's not always great at it either. And in key run situations, the sign of a good football team is when you can run the ball when you have to and when the other team knows that you're going to run the football. If you can still get tough yards under those conditions, then you got something. And I think he's one of those kinds of guys.
Here's James Conner talking about his mindset after leaving a place where he's called home for a really long time in Pittsburgh.
I feel brand new. You know, I'm excited for this opportunity. It's definitely a change of scenery for me. You know, been in Pittsburgh 8 years, and so I just felt, you know, I was just learning so many lessons, and this was all, that time in Pittsburgh was just prepping me for where I'm at right now in my life, and this journey that brought me out here to AZ, and I feel like I was well-equipped, you know, just everything I've been through and continue to go through on this journey and leads me to here. So, man, I'm excited to be in this red. I'm excited. I'm truly excited, and it's a blessing.
Now, when the news broke yesterday that the Cardinals were bringing in James Conner for a visit, I think maybe even subconsciously a lot of Cardinal fans were doing the whole drawing a line down the center of the paper, making a pros and cons list. And there's a lot of pros with James Conner.
Pros and Conner list.
There you go. Pros and Conner. Injuries being certainly number one on the con list. He has not stayed healthy throughout a full season in the NFL. Last year, of course, he's dealing with an injury now that he suffered in the offseason riding an ATV. Here he was talking about being labeled as injury prone.
I understand that it comes with it and it's part of the game, but the only thing I can do is continue to prep myself and be ready and attack the problems as they come. They're not even problems, they're lessons. And like I said, it's just part of the journey. So been through things before, going to go through things in the future. And so, you know, only thing I can do is continue to get my body ready, which I do year in and year out. And so, you know, it's they're all challenges, and I look forward to challenges.
Yeah, I wonder as well, like yesterday when this was a possibility, thinking about how, okay, you bring in James Conner on a one-year deal, mm-hmm. How that could potentially affect the Cardinals' draft strategy at the running back position. Even though it's only a one-year deal, I see this as really lessening the chances that the Cardinals, and it probably would be a scenario where they move down in the first round, mm-hmm. maybe pick up some things, but also invest the first round pick in a running back like a Najee Harris. I find that to be far more improbable at this point now, even with the acquisition of James Conner for 1 year.
I agree with you. People have pointed out that Chase Edmonds only has a year left on his deal. Conner is only signed for a year, so it's not implausible that they draft a guy for the future, but I don't think that's where they're going to go either. But this is what I do like this. I do like a couple of things about the sum total of what we've seen with these acquisitions. I do like what Jared said earlier, that there's a lot of name recognition in these guys that Steve Keim has brought in, unlike guys like Robert Alford or others. Guys you hear about, and then you predictably get the stuff from the team. Oh, we love this guy. We wanted to draft this guy.
We
nearly traded for this guy. And fans are like, yeah, okay, I've never heard of the dude. And fans know and have seen these players.
Malcolm Butler, yeah. James Conner,
exactly.
AJ Green.
Right, exactly. So all these players are going to accomplish something pretty significant in terms of juicing up the fan base, which is no small feat after what we witnessed last year. So I think that's really good. And I also just think the sum effect of the type of guys these players are. They've brought in some hardcore football players who play the game accordingly. And that can only help. Now, can this head coach finally unveil an offense and connect all these dots? That remains to be seen. But it won't be for a lack of weapons.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And there could be more on the way. I mean, I said what I said about the running back position in the first round. I think you're going to see a wide receiver added high in the draft, first or second round for the Arizona Cardinals. I think corner is still obviously a possibility. We'll get into that a little bit later on. I like the pieces that they have. I like the additions they've made offensively, especially one in the middle of the offensive line, Rodney Hudson. Does it allow Cliff Kingsbury to unlock what he needs to unlock this year? Because there was a lot of that happened, but there was also a lot of bogging down last year. And I don't think anybody, whether close to it or far from it, that watched this Arizona Cardinals offense consistently last year would say that they reached the potential. James Conner sees potential in it.
Man, I just think explosive. I mean, just the weapons that we have, and you know, just everything. You know, with Hop obviously and Kyler, Chase doing his thing already. And so, you know, I was watching film. I'm like, man, this dude, he can ball, and I want to, you know, learn from him, be a part of it, and just get to work with him with Chase. And so, I just think, you know, ain't no telling. I can't predict nothing, but I know what I can guarantee is I'm going to come in here and work day in and day out, put my head down and grind, and you know, I'm in it for the long haul. So 17-game season, I'm looking forward to it.
You know, the only question left to answer pre-draft
is?
Fitzwatch.
Oh, boy.
Fitzwatch. Any cryptic tweets from anywhere today?
I haven't
Instagram
seen
messages?
I haven't seen anything.
Any rumors?
It was on another golf podcast.
Was he really?
Three. Yeah. He was on his third golf podcast of the offseason.
There's that many golf podcasts in the world?
There's three.
Okay.
So I don't know what he's going to do next. No, I
would play some of the sound, but it's really not relevant.
It's all about golf.
Fitzwatch.
Yeah.
It's all about golf.
That's why he's doing it.
And there's a couple of football.
Yeah.
Jarrett, again, get to work. Get creative.
I said, ready for this?
Yeah.
Podcast Jarrett Parlin.
Okay. Oh, not your best.
What?
I mean, I don't think it's your best.
What would you say my best was?
It's definitely not your best.
What was that soundbite from the end of week montage?
Parlin.
What am I best at?
Yeah, what are you the best at, Jarrett?
Yeah, and then it was 4 seconds of silence and then toss the break.
I will say this. Jarrett Carlin is the best at eating pizza prior to 10 a.m.
Yes, I can.
I've never seen anybody do it with such fervor.
I could eat 2 slices of bacon and green pepper pizza in under 5 minutes at 9:30 a.m.
Bacon and green pepper pizza?
Oh, man.
There's an interesting combo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
You do you, Jarrett.
Wow. Yeah. Never change, Jarrett. Never change.
Diamondback's about to get underway at Chase Field, but there is a question looming. How do you solve a problem like Bumgarner? See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
We'll do a whole West Side Story musical next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
That's Sound of Music.
You know, I thought with Bum's situation, we're trying to get him through five innings. We had the pitcher spot coming up, and he got kind of nicked up there at the back end of his outing. But, really for me, it continues to be getting ahead of hitters and finishing off hitters, and it's a work in progress. And he's continuing to accept what we're talking about as far as coaching goes, and, just keep plowing away, and the worm is going to turn.
That is Torey Lovello, manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, following another loss last night by the D-backs, 9-5 at the hands of the Oakland A's. Madison Bumgarner got the start, his third start of the year. It was much the same, as I pointed out earlier, in the 14 innings he's pitched. Opposing teams have scored in 9 of those 14 innings. His ERA is 11.20 through 3 starts. There's a lot of head scratching going on, and I appreciate. I'm gonna stay consistent on this.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate the support publicly that Torey Lovello has shown for struggling players, especially somebody as accomplished as Madison Bumgarner. But at some point, that patience, that support, that attitude has to change. If you're truly in the business of winning baseball games.
Yeah,
Madison Bumgarner said it himself last night. I got to give us a better chance to win a game, and he's not doing that right now. The coupling slow starts from himself with what I brought up in the D-backs on deck, the slow starts offensively, you're digging a hole that's really hard to get out of every fifth day with him on the mound.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I don't think that time is now, but at some point in time, if Madison Bumgarner can't be a little bit better and you really want to win baseball games, then you're going to have to replace him in the starting rotation and get him right someplace else if possible. Now, that's not what anybody wants to see or hear when a guy's making $85 million and is under contract through 2024, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's the downside of this. When Madison Bumgarner signed here, he was coming off a season in which he was okay. I mean, I don't know what word you would call it. He certainly wasn't vintage. I think you'd have to go back to 2016 maybe to find vintage Madison Bumgarner. But the guy the Diamondbacks signed seemed to have enough stuff still to be, a reasonable facsimile of his former self. But that hasn't been the case. I did a quick look at the advanced analytics, of which I understand about 18%. But
that's an advanced analytic in itself.
Yeah, the rankings of a lot of stuff are really, really bad. And you could see it last night if you're watching the game, just how hitters are digging in and they just, he doesn't have the location that he needs to have. He's leaving pitches up in the zone. His velocity was not good last night. I believe the average was 89. So he was a couple of ticks down. And consequently, he got lit up pretty hard. And it was very hard watching him in the fifth inning. I'll say this much, because he had come out of the fourth inning, and I believe the fourth inning was one of those rare clean innings of which he's only had a couple, few.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, this would be really good if he could get through five. And he just fell apart. He had a guy picked off a second, and he threw the ball into left field. Then he was clearly dejected by that. And the next pitch, Matt Chapman took him about 30 rows up into left field, just crushed the ball. Then he hit a guy, and then Torey Lovello came out, and that was the end of it all for him. So it's not a good situation. We've dealt with this so many times, and like you and a lot of other Diamondbacks fans, it's just hard to wrap your head around how they got into this situation again. They thought Madison Bumgarner was a safer bet than Zach Greinke turned out to be, or they would have never done it a second time. And yet Zach Greinke had the capability via his changeup and his slower pitches to recalibrate the difference between his fastball and his off-speed stuff. Madison Bumgarner, according to the advanced stats, he throws his changeup 4% of the time, barely ever throws it. And he said last night, I know I'm getting to the point where I'm going to have to, but he doesn't have any confidence in the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the weird thing
was,
so
what good is that then?
So what good is it?
Yeah, the way they structured the contract, where the first year was really reasonable,
mm-hmm.
and we're wound up being even more reasonable because they only played 60 games, but then it gets more expensive as he gets seemingly older and less effective.
Well, let me ask you guys this question. When you go through the history, the 25-year history of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and you look at if I was going to ask you what acquisition as a big name acquisition as a pitcher turned out the worst for the Diamondbacks, would the name Russ Ortiz show up a lot?
Mm-hmm.
Russ Ortiz still makes, that name makes Diamondbacks fans mad.
Mm-hmm.
In his first, in 2005, through his first 12 starts, that's where Madison Bumgarner is in his Diamondbacks career, 12 starts. Russ Ortiz had an ERA of 5.62. Madison Bumgarner's ERA is more than two runs higher than that.
Yeah, that's brutal.
And I have this weird feeling of, it's a mixture of frustration because I know he can be better than he's been. But you also, for a guy, again, that's accomplished so much, you feel bad when he struggles like that.
Yeah, last night I felt empathy. When he talked to the media, I felt empathy for him because Madison Bumgarner was not just a successful starting pitcher. He was a guy that had all that intimidation, all that aura, all that kind of, I'm going to stare you down kind of stuff. You can't be that guy if you're not getting anybody out.
No.
And this is sort of the lesson that the Cardinals are kind of dealing with about these guys who are not just longtime members of one team, but legends for that team. At a certain point when that team, you know, the J.J. Watts or A.J. Greens, Madison Bumgarner, lets that player go, where it gets to the point where they're like, okay, we can't really afford, it's not worth it to have them end their career with us. It's red flags. Obviously, you know, in Tom Brady's case, it's not always the case. But this is one of those situations where the Giants pretty much knew that his days as an effective pitcher were coming to an end.
Yeah, I mean, credit to them for that. It depends. I mean, the J.J. Watt example is different. There are some similarities, but he did ask, hey, can you let me go? I don't want to be here anymore. And, you know, they appeased him on that. In Bumgarner's case, it was just the extinguishing of a contract, and they didn't see it necessary to bring him back, and doubling it, let him walk to a division opponent, and I don't think they've looked back one second. Not that the Giants are any great shakes, but I think they're headed in the right direction.
I don't know who said this, but I thought this was fascinating. I think maybe it was you, Vinny, that Madison Bumgarner is a legitimate San Francisco sporting icon.
Yeah.
For good reason. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a guy who went to two teams in a Hall of Fame career and was so beloved in one place and so the opposite in his next place. And that's where this story is going. And that's a shame on a lot of different levels. Because Madison Bumgarner, at his best, was the kind of guy that a fan base rallies around.
I want to play this more, because this question gets asked Torey Lovello every time Madison Bumgarner pitches about his level of concern. And last night it was phrased, are you more concerned with Bumgarner this year as opposed to last year?
You know, I'm just going to judge it day by day. And through my conversations with him and outing by outing, and you know, he wants to be as good as he can possibly be. And he's working extremely hard. So I'm going to throw out last year. And you know, I'm going to just continue to believe in him, continue to support him, and you know, make sure that he's getting everything he needs from me and every other coach that's around him. That's my focus. I don't want to start to play the game of what is bothering all of us, because you know, we all have endless lists. I want our team to play a perfect baseball game every single night. That's impossible. That's just not going to happen. But I'm going to hold this team to the highest standard possible to go out there and execute and expect to win baseball games, because we do things fundamentally sound every single night.
That was kind of a meandering answer. But on the Bumgarner part of it, I'm going to continue to support him. And we know that's consistent with Torey Lovello. He'll do that for players. But like I brought up earlier in the show, Bick, it's something to monitor, because there's only so many times you can throw them out there and get same result.
No doubt. And at some point in time, if you are instilling a message to your team that we're in this to win games, then you can't be hypocritical and trot a guy out there just to justify the money you're paying him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a hard situation to manage, because I don't know how agreeable Madison Bumgarner would be to alternative spring training. You know, who knows?
We've seen teams protect veteran stars in a number of different ways.
Yeah, we have. It's a good point.
Injured list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I think he's going to end up if this doesn't get any better.
Coming up next, normally Luka Doncic only cries on the court during a game, but now he's doing it after a game. But does he have a point? We'll get into it next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Floor Burns with Bickley and Murata.
Oh, the regular season winding down in the NBA. Of course, the Suns back at it tonight with Miami in town. The homestand continuing, and then it is a brutal road stretch for the Suns. But a team that is not as high up in the standings as the Phoenix Suns is the Dallas Mavericks. And if you look at the standings right now in the NBA's Western Conference, the Mavericks are number 7. And the teams that are in 7, 8, 9, and 10 right now are Dallas, Memphis, San Antonio, and Golden State. Now, there's a 3.5-game gap between 7 and 10. Dallas, 29-24. Golden State, 26-28. It's relevant this year because there's a play-in tournament for the first time.
Yeah.
For the teams in the 7-10 spot. So, Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks was asked about the play-in tournament that could be in the future for the Dallas Mavericks, and he told people what he felt.
Obviously, we're trying to get a sixth seed. I don't understand the idea of playoff playing. You play 72 games to get in the playoffs, and then maybe you lose 2 in a row and you're out of the playoffs. So I don't see the point of that. But we're just trying here to get to the sixth spot, and I think that's our goal right now.
Okay.
Maybe even more than sixth spot.
All right, so the goal is to get to the sixth spot. They are right now, Bick, a game and a half behind, excuse me, 2 games behind Portland, who's in sixth right now. But obviously the part of that quote that got all the headlines was, I don't see the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, wow, conveniently now Luka doesn't see the point of it because they're in that situation.
Yeah, that's always going to be the case.
And I think there's some validity to that, but I also think there's validity to what Luka Doncic says.
Well, Mark Cuban also echoed the same thing. So
let's be honest, it is stupid. It's as dumb as the 1-game playoff in baseball, but it's tremendously exciting. Now, if you're the team involved and you lose, you're not going to feel that way. You're going to feel like this is the biggest ripoff ever, that my team made it into the playoffs, and because we happen to be this seed or the last seed, now everything comes back to winning a game or winning 2 in a row. To me, it's a little bit weird. I was perfectly fine in the bubble. I told you that. And thank goodness they did it in the bubble, because the Phoenix Suns may not have ever gotten Chris Paul.
True. But that technically wasn't even the play-in tournament.
That wasn't the play-in tournament, but
they gave them an opportunity to get into the play-in tournament.
Teams there to finish out X amount of games, to go to a play-in tournament, to kind of not jump right into a postseason format.
I'm not calling you out for this. You say it. It's true. We all root for our own self-interest, so I'm right there with you. But Mark Cuban, in a series of messages to ESPN, kind of backed up a superstar. Well, he really backed up a superstar. He said, quote, I get why the NBA is doing it, but if we're going to be creative because of COVID, we should go straight up 1 through 20 and let the bottom 4 play in. This is the year particularly to do it, since the 10 games cut were in conference. The worst part of this approach is that it doubles the stress of the compressed schedule. Rather than playing for a playoff spot and being able to rest players as the standings become clearer, teams have to approach every game as a playoff game to either get into or stay in the top 6, since the consequences, as Luka said, are enormous. So players are playing more games and more minutes in fewer days. It is only fair to point out that Mark Cuban is part of the NBA Board of Governors, and they unanimously approved this plan for this year. But Cuban said, quote, in hindsight, this approach was an enormous mistake.
In hindsight, I didn't think we'd be in the 7th seed. I thought we'd be better.
In hindsight, he probably should have improved his roster a little bit more to avoid being in the 7th seed.
In hindsight, I forgot that Porzingis is injured for half the season every single year.
But at the heart of it, I agree with the sentiment. The regular season is the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
How you approach it is up to you.
Uh-huh.
Your goal is to have one of the top 8 win totals in your conference.
The other thing, though, is Mark Cuban accidentally sort of proved the point of what Adam Silver and the NBA have been trying to do, and that's stop players on the best teams from being rested in big games down the stretch. So this is actually making all the games important throughout the entire season.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, that's
which
a good point.
The NBA has always wanted and which teams have been totally moving away from.
Yeah, but I don't think – I think those two things are butting heads too. We saw an example. Again, I even mistakenly ripped Washington for allowing Davis Bertans to have a rest day against the Suns, saying mm-hmm. they're not going to the playoffs. They're two games out of the play-in tournament.
See?
And they're still resting.
That's ridiculous.
So, I mean,
here's what I think. I honestly think that the reason why people love Game 7 so much isn't because it's Game 7. It's because it's single elimination basketball. It's the same reason why people love the NCAA tournament. You get a basketball game where winner goes home or winner goes on, loser goes home. It's tremendous competitive drama. Unless you're the losing team or a fan base of either team having to reconcile that before you watch the game. We dealt with that right. in the one-game playoff against the Rockets.
Probably the best moment in local sports in the last 5 or 6
yep,
years.
Definitely, because we won. Yeah, it's tremendously exciting to people who don't have rooting interests and to people on the winning team, and it's a terrible injustice to the team that gets bounced, you know? So so I think it's kind of, like I said, I think it's shticky, but if it's serving a bigger purpose, okay, we'll deal with it. We'll live with it.
I mean, Dallas is 3.5 games better over the course of this point to the season than Golden State is.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, proving that they are the better team.
Yeah.
I understand. I would understand the feelings. I understand the feelings of Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
And maybe Mark Cuban should have thought more before being part of the...
If you're the better team, then just beat the team then. You only have to beat them once.
And that's the other thing is that it gives you incentive to keep pushing and don't be a 7 or an 8 seed.
That's what I'm...
Don't have to worry about that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was saying also is that like... In Cuban's complaint, he's almost just saying, like, yes, that's what they want. Is they want you to try to keep moving up in the things. They want you to try to win all the games. That's the worst part of the NBA is when they don't even try to win games down the stretch.
Well, we've gone through that a lot recently here. Thank God that's not the case anymore. I just think it's an interesting debate. And without seeing this particular form of the play-in tournament put into practice, I have my doubts about it. Who knows? Maybe when it happens, I'll love it. Maybe the basketball will be fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I've got reservations.
The argument to me is, why didn't they just keep it as just the 8th seed as the one that's involved in it? Like, why make it the 7th and 8th seeds?
Why do they keep expanding the playoffs in every sport?
Yeah, well, that's right.
Revenue.
And that's the other thing is, like, you're giving away 10 games this season, and you're playing a lot of the season with either limited crowds or no crowds.
Mm-hmm.
In the NBA's mind, like, we got to make up the money somewhere, guys, and we know you want to make up the money too, so don't be complaining now that it's affecting you in that way.
Well, and they didn't bring up the finances of it, Doncic and Cuban. They brought up the competitive part, which I still think has validity to it. Coming up next, we've asked the question, what do you do with Madison Bumgarner at this point? Coming up, we'll get some of your solutions in social studies. Straight ahead, it's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.